Hello, good people. My name is Linda Mtenjane, a co-founder of The Space Between Us. Welcome to our conversation on burnout. Burnout is very real, and it's on the rise. We know that burnout is caused by stress, primarily in the workplace. It has to do with feeling exhausted emotionally, physically, and mentally. And we also know that women, especially working mothers, are more likely to be affected by burnout. Here in South Africa, we looked at a study done by Deloitte, and they were talking about 40% of women feeling burnt out, and 51% said that these levels were much higher than last year. Many are facing excessive workloads, a conflict in values, and a perceived lack of control over what they need to be doing. So now is the time to drive this conversation. So welcome to Conversations with the Space Between Us. Joining me in the studio is Riabetso Abayes, one of the counseling psychologists at the Space Between Us, and Palisa Ntuahai, the Human Resource Director at the JSE. They'll be sharing their own experiences and their expertise, and they'll show us how, as leaders, we can step up and how we as individuals can improve our own resilience and mental well-being.
Right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Conversations with the Space Between Us podcast. And we are here today to speak about burnout and young professionals. Welcome, Palisa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rhea. I'm pleased I'm here to have this important conversation.
It's important, and I'm really excited to get into it with you. I would like to start off by just defining what burnout is. I think it's important just to define it so that all of our listeners and, you know, we're all on the same page and, you know, we know what we're speaking about here, because we often use burnout very interchangeably with stress, you know, or just feeling a little bit exhausted and overworked. So I'd like to just define burnout according to what the World Health Organization says. So it says that burnout is chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. So it's speaking about the workplace specifically, and it's implying that it is this prolonged stress that has not been managed very well. So that is what we're speaking about. And I'd like to just point out here that the World Health Organization actually added burnout to the classification of diseases as of January last year. So it is seen as a condition that is affecting a lot of working professionals. And it's serious. And I guess that's why we're having this conversation today, right?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I want to provide us with a little bit of context. We're looking at post-COVID. I'm always very careful about saying post-COVID, because are we really post-COVID, or are we just taking a break, or what's going on? So just for context sake, we're speaking about how a lot of people are working according to the hybrid model, right? There are many people that are still working remotely but are going into the office every now and then. And you know, I want to speak a little bit about how that itself has contributed to burnout. I imagine people have had to change their routines. We're speaking about boundaries, and I know we get into that a little bit later on. But also this concept of always being on, always being available, because now you're sort of back and forth. It's not the typical bums in seats, I was here, so now I can go home. I think a lot of people have actually struggled with the back and forth and working in both ways. I'd like to ask you, Palisa, I mean, what has your experience been of working remotely? And now that we are more, you know, back in the office a little bit more, but still working remotely as well, still having online meetings, I mean, what has your experience been?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm glad you started with the definition, because I think sometimes people confuse normal stress, which does happen, and prolonged stress. That actually renders you, you know, unable to help yourself. So we're talking about people that have reached a stage whereby they really need an intervention or something else to help them assist, you know, with the phase that they're in. And to answer your question, you know, Rhea, when I joined the JSE, we were actually still under lockdown. And I have my own personal experience of the challenges of assimilating in a new company without having the impromptu, you know, opportunity to learn, because, you know, the people that make the organization is the company. It's not the building. You know, if you all left the space between us, you know, your building, you just have a facility and a desk and chairs, but it's the people that make you feel that you either made the right decision to be there. So there was a huge sense of loneliness, you know, if I may, and feeling as though I don't really know the people that I'm working with. And a lot of our new joiners actually had similar sentiments, you know, when we did kind of our check-in interviews with them. But what I also saw was, you know, interesting behavioral biases emerge. And so if you think about it, we don't have the boundary of start and end time, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you don't have that commute to work and, you know, back home, which actually allows you to either mentally get into your work day or actually just kind of reflect on how was my day and start thinking about something else.
Exactly.
So those boundaries completely disappeared. And so you can imagine, you know, this whole notion of always on, it was in the mind as well. So over and above meetings that went on till late in the evening, it really was about that inability to switch off and possibly create those mental boundaries about, okay, now it's time to do something else, possibly. So we saw a lot of people actually work long hours, you know, whether they were new or they were, you know, at the JC for a long, long time. So I think that for me was the first thing that really became a real issue for us. And then behaviorally, and I think this is an important point specifically for leaders where, you know, it's so easy to go to Rhea that I know and have worked with when there's an issue over the newbie because my bias is now around action.
Yes.
And I think for a lot of companies that were grappling with solving issues for clients for other divisions, if you're in a corporate functions as an example, that bias of really, you know, being action oriented and saying, who's going to give me the answer quickly? And so therein, you know, people that were fairly new in the system missed out on that opportunity for on-the-job coaching. So those were some of the things that I think, you know, were really prevalent for us that really emerged. And, you know, with hindsight, other things that we really got to learn in that it's so easy for everybody to assume you're home, you're comfortable, you're safe. But, you know, it wasn't safe for everybody. You know, there were other people where going to work was actually a form of escapism.
Yes.
Because they were either dealing with some form of abuse or it was their breakaway because perhaps they were looking after a sickly parent or a sickly child. And so actually the time away from the home was, you know, in a sense, their alone time to focus on something else other than the stresses that were happening, you know, in the household. So those are some of the things that I really experienced.
Thank you for that, Balesa. And when you started speaking, you mentioned that you joined the JSE in lockdown, and we all remember lockdown. How was it for you personally to join an organization or a company when we were amongst this sort of crisis? And, you know, career-wise, it's a big step. You're going in, there's a reason why, you know, you wanted to go, you know, into that space. And now it's limited in a way by, you know, the restrictions that we were under. What was your experience of joining a company in the middle of lockdown?
So it was really challenging. To your point, you know, I joined at a senior role. And so I already had a big mandate to deliver on. And one of them was getting the organization ready to adopt a new way of working. And, you know, you can imagine trying to influence and get people to understand that, you know, work is really what we do and not necessarily a place to go. But I don't have the social connections. I don't have those relationships. And a lot of the, you know, conversations have to be structured and formalized. So that opportunity for me to connect with others on a deeper personal level, because that's what builds trust. You know, the moment I know who Rhea is and I can relate, you know, in some way, that's when I believe, you know, in you and I find you credible almost. And so new environment, the only person that knows me is the person that hired me. And I have to now establish new relationships, you know, build rapport with people I've never worked with, I've never met, except in a formal interview. It really was difficult and it was lonely at times. I worked at being in the office more, but it helped you know, to cement the relationships with certain individuals who did the same. But I certainly couldn't, you know, insist or impose on other people to do that. So my time to assimilate, I would argue, was probably longer than if, you know, there was no lockdown or COVID, you know, induced lockdown. And I could actually meet with people, you know, regularly. So it really was probably the most challenging transition, actually, of my career.
You've ever had to make, sure. Okay. And I mean, it just highlights then how important it is for the community aspect, how important it is for us to work together, because as humans, we are social beings, we need other people. And your role specifically is a people role. HR is people. People need to connect with you and depend on you and come to you and feel comfortable enough. So for you, I imagine it must have been really difficult because you weren't physically there for people to actually get to know and engage with on the level that I think would have been possible pre-lockdown, pre-COVID.
Correct. And I mean, you know, that makes me think of the analogy of the smell of the place. You know, so to my point earlier, you can walk into a building and it's empty. That doesn't give you a sense of how things are here. And so even my own efforts to go in, you know, I didn't derive anything from it because nobody's there, actually. So I'm here, but I want to connect with others, right? And those are the people that make the environment what it is. A lot of my approaches in some of the change initiatives, you know, that I introduced, I would argue, took longer purely because there was still a lot of catching up in just building the relationships, you know, and for people to know me and, you know, believe in me and believe in what I had to say. We had a lot of, you know, kind of town halls virtually, but it's not the same thing. And I think that's the piece that for me, leaders need to understand and appreciate. When we dial in on a screen, some people are listening attentively. Others are doing other things on the side. You know, others are multitasking. You're not really certain you have everyone's full attention, you know. And I believe now that there's nothing that can substitute, you know, that opportunity to really meet with somebody, you know, in person. And start the relationship in that way. Notwithstanding where we are now, you know, sometimes it's required to just get on and do certain things remotely. But I just don't think that, you know, you can ever be as effective specifically in connecting with other human beings in that way. You know, for me right now, when I look back, I think about Jeffrey, Godfrey, the security guys, because that's how my day starts. You know, it's, hi, how are you? You know, it's Simba at the coffee bar who offers me my red cappuccino. That is my work day starting, you know, and the whole experience behind it. You know, right through to my EA, who's forever helpful, and says hi. And it's amazing how much that already gets you in a mind space of work, you know, after just connecting, because that's what makes it, you know, the place. So I think it certainly was, it's lots of lessons. I don't think we all see the world the same, but, you know, from our own experience, I'm a firm believer that where it's opportune, Rhea, you know, hybrid means incorporating a bit of physical interaction. And for new people, new joiners, people are very good at hiding behind screens. You never really know what you're dealing with unless you can see somebody, you know, in the eye and say, Rhea, you don't look okay today. You know, tell me what is happening. It's really powerful and it's important.
It is. And you bring, you know, such emphasis to the importance of relationships, right? Yes, we are all professionals and, you know, we have our career goals and things that we want to achieve in terms of our careers. But what does also make that possible are the relationships that we do have with other people. As adults, we spend so much time at work. I mean, I imagine if we were to work out how many hours you spend in the workplace in your adult life, it will probably shock a couple of people. But yes, that's why we need to enhance and encourage the face-to-face, as you've said, and those relationships, even if we are working in a hybrid model, but ensuring that those aspects of work are incorporated into what people do. So I want to speak, you know, about the community in the workplace. There is a psychologist by the name of Maslach who speaks about things that contribute towards burnout within the workplace. So he's looking at the organizational context, and he says one of the things that contribute to burnout is when there is a breakdown in the community in the workplace. And what he refers to is where there's, you know, poor communication, where there are no mechanisms to assist with conflict resolution, for example, a lack of support. There's no feedback, you know, so people are sort of functioning in a space where you're working with other people, but you do not feel supported and you don't feel like the things that should be in place to help you be your best are there. And he speaks about how that contributes to some people experiencing burnout. And I just want to, you know, get a sense from you, how can leaders actually set the tone for a more connective and supportive working environment? Just bearing that in mind, what can leaders ensure, be mindful of, and, you know, put into place to ensure that people feel supported in the workplace?
So, you know, it's such a, there's so many spectrums to it, but I think two for me that are really powerful is carving out time to talk about other stuff, you know. I think we live in such a world where we don't make time for conversations about other things. And that is a missed opportunity to actually be more inquisitive about how are things going, you know, in your life. What else outside of work is interesting or are you proud of? Because leaders, you know, we must be obsessed with the growth and development of others, you know, contrary to the old belief where it's about me, me, me.
Yes.
So I think for me, you know, the investment in time to have those conversations, Rhea, is so critical. Because when you have a focused conversation and are genuinely interested in someone, it improves the trust and it allows the person to share more, so that you actually know what is happening with the individual.
True.
And you know how to show up. The second one, you know, in my mind is I've seen how sometimes we pay attention to the wrong things or the wrong behaviors.
Yes.
Which are what, you know, is awarded in corporate. And by this I mean I have sat in too many meetings where the person who's worked the whole weekend or until 2 a.m. is praised. That's wrong behavior. Because what are you saying? You are not saying it's okay to have boundaries. You are actually celebrating behaviors that contribute, you know, to accumulated stress in people's lives. And so
exactly,
it becomes that dilemma where, you know, as HR, we are called to roll out and make all these initiatives. But how helpful is it really when what's rewarded and, you know, recognized and incentivized here is you working yourself to death.
Yeah.
And that for me is a mindset shift that's required. There are seasons where we all have to burn the midnight candle, but I think there are too many conversations where people that are, you know, breaking themselves in order to deliver are being praised and celebrated, and it shouldn't be the case. I think if we can get that right, you know, it'll go a long way in just strengthening the how people are relating, what good, you know, what being an effective staff member actually looks like. And it is about working smarter, but not at the detriment of your health or, you know, the time that you have that you actually should be with family, because those are some of the things that actually fill your cup, right? And that's how you show up as a strong and committed, you know, employee. Those are the two that come to mind.
And I love what you've said, because the focus again is on relationships, as you're saying. So leaders should then make space or have space to get to know their employees, to get to know who people really are. Because I think that also creates a safe space for there to be any kind of intervention should something happen or should something go wrong or should there need to be things put into place to support employees. And I love what you said about the second thing as well, just around how, what it is that you are encouraging in the workplace, right? Because yes, you do put in all these wellness initiatives and wellness days, and, you know, a lot of companies send out all these emails with all these tips and stuff like that. But if you're going to be sitting in a meeting and it's not about wellness, it's actually the opposite of that that is being encouraged, I imagine it also causes a little bit of confusion because, yes, we should look after ourselves, but I also shouldn't be sleeping because I should be performing at a particular level. So I love what you've pointed out because it really brings it back to, as I've said, the relationship, but also the things that need to be prioritized in order to manage that prolonged stress that eventually can lead to burnout in some people. How can leaders then drive a conversation around allowing people to be able to set their own boundaries, to say no when they need to say no? What role do leaders play in allowing people or giving people the space or the, I almost want to say the freedom to be able to say, I'm sorry, I can't, or I won't be able to, or to just have a boundary of, at 5 p.m., it's 5 p.m., and I will not be able to work further. Yeah. I'm not available. You know, I'm not on my emails. What do those conversations look like?
Sure. you know, it varies. But, you know, some of the things that come to mind, I look at the impact I have on my team when I've left something to the last minute. So I think it's so key when you are leading others to firstly lead yourself. You know, because whatever you do will impact them, right? So as practically and as simple as that, you just, if you manage yourself and you plan well and you know what's coming, you know, 3 months from now that's due and your team needs to work a week in putting the data together, I think it is about just being a responsible leader, you know, in that sense by setting the tone. I've also found what really works, you know, Rhea, is we have, so conversations about, you know, anything but work, because what it allows me to do is I know that I don't necessarily judge somebody else, you know, in a negative way because they weren't able to show up. But I know who I can tap into, you know, so I know and it sounds simple, but you'll be amazed at how, you know, leaders don't know. They don't know. It's the assumption is because I'm the leader and I must sit. You know, a task that needs to be done. People must just do whatever. And I think if you can acknowledge and appreciate how this is going to cause a disruption in someone's life and then negotiate, you know, an alternative or what is possible for us to meet on the request, it just makes you seem like a human, you know, an understanding person. You might not be able to shift the deadline, but it does mean that you acknowledge that it is causing some disruption in other people's lives. And I think you'll be more respected for that, you know, and people are likely to pull in the hours that they need to because something needs to get done. And because it's not a BAU, you know, it's really on exception. So I think knowing, you know, who does what, how people's schedules run is quite key. And it means the leader being interested, right? Having conversations about what people are doing afterwards is important. And you'll see the theme for me really is communication. And the reason that so is we had so many cases where people were on the verge of being placed on a formal performance management plan. And it took follow-on discussions with other people whereby we actually learned that they were actually battling with other issues that affected how they were performing at work. And, you know, till this day, I'm still amazed by how, you know, a woman, you know, with kids, obviously to just protect her identity, was handed a notice to appear for a disciplinary inquiry when actually she was just being severely beaten at home. And so half the time, the video's not on, or she's not available on certain times because things are not good. And I'm still sad because I keep thinking, who was there nobody curious enough to say, what is happening? Do you want to meet with me outside of work? Can I come and we go to the coffee shop rather? You know, I'm worried that you're not showing up this way. It really would have taken no more than 5 minutes to just ask. And I think, you know, had the relationship been good, I'm sure she would have been safe, you know, to say this is actually what's happening. So that balance is key. People are not robots. We're not here to work indefinitely. And I think until you genuinely show an interest in what people are doing, who are they, who's Rhea outside of work, actually? What is she like? I think that's when that trust, you know, can be really deepened. And it's easier to have other conversations, you know, even during the course of work, about who did what for fun, you know, and who needs to go bungee jumping because they feel, you know, there's a lot and they need to just, you know, calm down. I think it really boils down to that. And I just think the quality of conversations are a reflection of the quality of the relationships that we have at work. And if that isn't right, you're never going to know what's happening in Rea Space. You're never going to be comfortable to talk about, let's actually have our one-on-one at Mug and Bean on Friday. You know, everything's always going to be formal and you're never going to get the detail of everything else that's happening. And it's going to be harder for you to negotiate, you know, when times are rough and everybody has to kind of lean in. But it's so much easier if the relationship, you know, is safe and you're able to do so because you know what the impact is. Even if you can't do anything about it, but you can acknowledge it, you know. So that's really my view on that and partly experience.
I love your emphasis on communication and on trust because those are the building blocks for all relationships, number one. But also going back to that point of the breakdown of community and how that contributes towards burnout. What you're speaking to is actually speaking to, or what you're speaking about, sorry, is speaking to building the community in the workplace. You're speaking about forming those relationships so that someone can be able to approach and say, this is what's going on. I'm not okay. Are you okay? Etc. And it's really fundamental things that we all know how to do. We all know that they're important, but for some reason in the workplace, they aren't prioritized as much as they should be. So I like that you're emphasizing that. And I'd like to find out from you, Balesa, how have you ensured your boundaries, especially as a leader, but also as someone that works with other people? How have you ensured your boundaries to make sure that you're okay with all the demands that, you know, are placed upon you and all the expectations, you know, that come your way? How do you manage boundaries in your space and in your life? You know, you aren't just Balesa, human resources director. You wear many different hats. And I'm just wondering about that. How have you managed? And I imagine, you know, this conversation is important for a lot of people to understand how to manage boundaries, especially when you are a working professional that has a lot of roles that you actually fulfill in your life.
Yeah, so, you know, over and above my work responsibilities, I am a single mom to a 16-year-old going on 30. But I have accepted that with the hours I have in the day, it is impossible for me to do everything that I need to. So part of me helping myself with my boundaries has been to outsource certain things, you know. I think I've mentioned this briefly, but, you know, when everybody else had the benefit of dropping their children off, I didn't have that because sometimes my board meeting starts at 7. Other times it's running right through to night or it's right there in the middle of the day. So it's not something that I was able to do, but it was about, okay, when he does come home, perhaps dinner time is when we get to connect, you know, and we have dinner together. It also forces me to get up from my desk, you know, and focus on other things that are filling the cup. The other piece, Gia, Rhea, I keep calling you Gia, my niece's Gia, is so knowing how my energy flows, I think it's a deeply personal exercise for everybody to do. And I have energy for days in the morning. And so I work at dealing all the difficult tasks, all the hard meetings, you know, right there so that I'm not lazy and taking shortcuts later on and doing a disservice, you know, in how I'm showing up. And that for me allows me to, you know, if I call 7 o'clock, you know, it's time to just leave the day, then I know I've dealt all the key things when my energy was at its peakest. And therefore, me saying, I think today, you know, the work for today is over. I've given myself permission and the license to truly switch off because I've been able to prioritize that which is important at a time that I actually have the most energy, you know, to deal with it. And it's hard. It takes discipline. It takes consistency. But I love it because I wake up the next day and I can tackle the day's issues, you know, because I don't have stuff that's, you know, left over from yesterday. I also negotiate, and I think it's something that everybody needs to do. I expect my team to do the same with me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my boss currently knows if she wants something from me, you know, I'm going to suggest an alternative time for delivery if it's something that I know genuinely I won't be able to deliver, you know, in the time that she's asked. It's easy to say yes, yes, yes. I think we are conditioned to say yes.
Yes.
But what's also great is she's given me the space and the license to negotiate, right? Mm. And so that's what I do, because if I don't do that, the quality of whatever it is, you know, will be affected ultimately. And so in creating those boundaries, that's what I've done. The last piece that I think became more real over the last 3 years has been applying a professional distance. So in my line of work, people are complex. People mm-hmm. are, you know, HR, there's never a dull moment. So it's so important for my own mental boundaries yes. to not take the problems of that staff member with me to bed.
True.
And that includes the lady we learned was actually being abused at home. You know, it's about we've responded in a manner that shows we're a caring employer. But when I go to sleep, I cannot take any of that with me because it affects me in the long run. Mm. And those are some of the, you know, the practices that I do. So I'm clear what it is I can do. It doesn't make me a bad mom that I can't drop off my son. Mm. It just means I have time to start the day and mm-hmm. we can actually have a good catch up over dinner later, you know, and I'm okay with that. Not comparing myself with the next person because circumstances and jobs differ, you know. So I think we're here to, you know, to work so we can live, not live to work.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important for every single person to know why they're here, what is their purpose, you know, what life do they want for themselves. So that I think we stop pursuing and I don't know, just continuing with habits that actually don't serve us, you know, in the long run. That's really how I've tried. I'm sure I could do more. But daily, I find that is very helpful.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm a big negotiator. My colleagues know. You don't call Palisa with a last-minute request. If I can, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
but
you're likely to get it tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the system actually shifts. You know, then people
yes.
know how to deal with you, you
yes.
know. And I think that's key.
Yeah, yeah. But that's exactly the point of boundaries, because you are communicating to people how they can actually manage
Correct.
With you and, you know, deal with you in the space that you're in. You know, it's about teaching people what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, what I've found through just speaking to a lot of people, especially over the past couple of years, is how it's become difficult to set boundaries. Mm. And I hope from what you've said, our listeners are able to hear and get tips. I mean, you basically just gave tips on how you can set boundaries, not to feel guilty about the things that you can't do. And I think most importantly, to negotiate and to see if there's a space to negotiate. But what you're doing then, again, is teaching people and showing people what works for you mm-hmm. and what doesn't work. Because I think what's happened over the past few years is that, especially with working from home, I've spoken to so many people that feel like they've had to overcompensate mm-hmm. for the fact that they are not in the office.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm not in the office, I'm now going to work until 7, 8 p.m. to prove that I'm working,
mm-hmm.
right? They can't see that I'm working, but now I have to prove. I have to be online. I'm sending emails late into the night or whatever the case may be. I remember during lockdown, my working station was at my dining room table, but my dining room table is where I also sit and have dinner with my son. And it became so, it was weird. It
yeah.
was just strange where my laptop was there all the time. So at 7 p.m., I'd be like, ah, it's there anyway. Let me open it. And I would have never done that before COVID. My laptop actually didn't even come home with me. But now it was there. It's on the dining room table. It's in my personal space. So you then end up just yourself blurring that boundary. And what's become important, I think, through many conversations with people, especially speaking about burnout, is how it's important to reinstate those. Even if you are still working from home, you do need to have a cutoff point. I was speaking to someone a few weeks ago that said that what they had to do for themselves was to only work in the study. So once they left the study, they were done. It was like leaving the office and putting that physical boundary in place of, I only work when I'm in this room of the house. And once I'm out, then I'm with my family. I'm, you know, doing other things that mm-hmm. have nothing to do with work me. And how I think a lot of people are actually experiencing that, the mm-hmm. difficulty with the overcompensating, with those boundaries that are no longer in place. And that adds to overworking yourself, right? So you feel like, okay, I'm doing what I need to do. I can anyway. I'm home. But work overload is a real thing,
mm-hmm.
Where you are actually putting so much on yourself mm-hmm. and not realizing the impact of that in the long run. Yeah. Again, work overload is one of the contributors to burnout that Maslach speaks about, how when you have either too much work or your work is too complex or it's too urgent, and that speaks to your point about negotiation, how do you then navigate that space so that you are managing with that issue of being overworked? Is it the boundaries? Is it negotiating? Is it, you know, just communicating and saying, unfortunately, this is way too complex for me to address within this, you know, period of time. How do we make it work? How do we actually manage this? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts around that, around the how people have had to change or readjust themselves in the hybrid model or working from home? What has that done to people and how can they manage that?
I suspect we are still dealing with a lot of, you know, survivor guilt. So a lot of people who perhaps they still have their jobs, you know, they weren't affected, you know, financially as others. That sense of overcompensating, what you touched on, I think we see a lot of that. And so that's why to almost say no or to renegotiate, you know, feels like you are not being a diligent employee, right? And that's the issue. That's actually what we need to get over. You know, a lot of people are still struggling with proximity bias, because if that wasn't the case, then this you know, view of wanting to be seen always on, or your Microsoft Office status light being green.
Yeah.
wouldn't be there. But it clearly means it's there, right? So how do we as leaders, you know, drive more conversations about people taking time off, really? And and sometimes, I mean, I've seen what Leila does. When we have our first weekly, it's every, the cadence is every Tuesday. She wants to know what everybody did over the weekend. And it's powerful because it's saying, I hope you took time out to do something for yourself and your family, right?
Yeah.
So as a leader, I think we are conduits to driving that, influencing, having those conversations to make it okay. And not expecting people to be available, you know, all the time. Because outside of that, you know, we've got adults who work in the workplace and it takes, you know, time for new habits to form.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to encourage leaders and say, and even people that are listening who have leaders, to say, try and ask, how urgent is this report?
Mm-hmm.
You say you need it tomorrow. Would it be an issue if I sent it on Thursday and see what you get? Because I don't think we spend enough time being in that moment of really renegotiating. And if it's really a big issue, then make it clear, you know, what is going to be on the parking bay, because now you have to attend to this, because we only have so much capacity. You know, it sounds so complex, but it actually is that simple. We have so much capacity and so much, you know, concentration levels that we can apply to work tasks. And until we are able to gently push back or renegotiate, I think this is going to be with us, you know, for generations to come. So it is about having the courage to be transparent about what else is on your desk. And if family time is what's on your desk, then so be it, you know. And if in the company that you work at that's frowned upon, then I question if you're in the right company, you know, because that's when you need to have different conversations with yourself. And that's harsh, but it's the reality. You know, industries are not the same. I get it. But I think, you know, if people's health is really deteriorating because the environment, you know, doesn't see human beings as whole human beings, you know, then people can only really vote with their feet until they get it, right? But it's both ways, because at times leaders do it blindly without realizing. And until you teach your team, your leader, you know, how you work, it also means on your end, you know, holding your end of the bargain, right? So if work needs to be done, you actually do it, then you've got more collateral to actually negotiate, you know, and push back certain things. I think that's really key. If until we get to master that, it's really going to be, you're always going to blame the boss. And workers, you know, mindset, like I said, Hofstede talks about six dimensions, you know, and in Africa, this positional distance is such a big one for us, because it does mean the tendency of pushing back or saying no to your leader is actually very low. We don't do it. It's not in our DNA. But I think what lockdown and COVID helped us to do was to really look at our lives and say, this is not sustainable. This is not the way.
Yeah.
And if something, it doesn't have to be unreasonable, but if it's really not something I can deliver on now, how do I go back and say, Palesa, do you really need it tomorrow at 12? Can I give it to you at 5? Because I have these three things I need to attend to in the morning. And see.
But what I'm also hearing from what you're saying, Palesa, and thank you for that, is you're saying that, yes, leaders do have a responsibility to create this space and to create opportunities for people to feel comfortable enough to approach them, for example. But it's also the responsibility of the person themselves.
Correct.
To be able to say and to, I mean, I don't want to use the word stand up for yourself, because it's not, I mean, that sounds a little bit, you know, aggressive or confrontational, but to be able to say, you know, unfortunately, I won't be able to, or this is what's going on, or is it possible to, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's also people's responsibility to take charge themselves for what it is that they can and can't do, and not be irresponsible by pushing themselves or putting themselves in a position that is going to be detrimental to them.
Correct.
So it goes both ways, and it takes, yes, the space is important and I need to be free to approach my line manager, but I also need to speak up. I also need to take responsibility for myself and the way that I am functioning within the workplace, right?
Absolutely. Spot on. Well said. It's too easy to blame the system, right? And blame one side. But, you know, I always just challenge my team to say, but what are you doing about it? You know, because that is the responsibility we all have for ourselves.
No, for sure. For sure. And, you know, speaking about burnout and you know, I want to go back to the definition that speaks about prolonged stress. It's about what are you doing to manage the stress in the meantime. It can't just come from work. It has to come from you and the things that you do, you know, for yourself. And you've mentioned a couple of times filling your own cup. And that's exactly what it is. You know, when you're on a plane, they say you put on your oxygen mask before you help the person next to you, which I've never understood for the longest time. And then I was like, it makes perfect sense, because how do I help others when I'm not okay? And those small little things that fill your cup end up being so essential towards buffering you against the impact of stress, the impact of really difficult circumstances that you go through, or that we all go through in life. You know, what are some of the things that you do to fill your own cup? And I also want to speak about the relationships in your life that also fill your cup, right? So what are the things and who are the people that help your cup to stay fuller rather than emptier?
So I love nature. I love walking outdoors. I'm a big hike enthusiast, and it didn't start during lockdown when everybody was doing
when
it.
When everyone was a hiker.
I've been doing it. because exercise and physically looking after your body is important. You know, we underestimate it. We really do. And I think it's important for everybody to have some sort of spiritual belief. You know, whatever that is for you.
Yes.
Because it reminds you that, you know, life is so much bigger than what we see, you know, in front of us. My son is very important. He's a big part of who I am. And, you know, my partner, when 2020 started, I think I'd been single for a very long time.
Mm.
And after 8 months of staring at the walls and my son's hamsters, I thought, you know, there must be more to life than work.
There must be.
So I thought, God, if I make it out of here, I promise I will make a relationship work. I will bring myself. And it's been really fruitful, and life is more colorful. Somebody who keeps me honest, challenges me. And I call him my gossip partner. You know, he hates that, but I'm like, it's true.
Yeah.
Because he gets to know all about the work dramas, the personal dramas, the friends,
everything.
Who fought with who.
Yeah.
And so that human connection again, yeah. you know, but at a different level, is key. And a solid group of friends, you know, that I call my CEO squad, because they're also different, but, you know, they're a big part of my personal board of directors because they challenge me to think differently. They bring a different perspective to sometimes the same situation, and that can only make our minds expand. And I think, you know, the big thing for most people coming out of that isolation was really appreciating how it's so good to be with other people. So I've really invested a lot more in that. And, you know, things that kind of help my mind to stay creative. So I paint. It's a big secret.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few paintings I've completed. And I always, I really believe that everybody needs a hobby that'll just unleash that creative side of, you know, them. Whether you want to start knitting, perhaps, or painting, or I don't know. You know, it's something that forces you to work on a task, but is not necessarily work related.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, the reason why we are so fresh after a timeout is because we've taken a break from all of that. And so it's so key for everybody to find all of those things, you know, for themselves, because a break really is key. And sometimes you might get back to your work and have a different perspective altogether that actually sorts the issue, right? So that time out is key. And I think it has to be a combination of things, you know. But those are things for me that really work really well. And if I may, have helped me to just be resilient, you know. Because then each day is really new. I see it for the opportunity it is each week, each month. And when you've got time out planned, it really helps you to look forward to something.
Yes.
And that is important.
Yes.
This notion of work-life balance, you know, I have debates with my team all the time. Yes, we know it's not there, but I think then people forget to create the flow in their day.
Themselves.
You know what I mean? And sometimes it means if you have meetings all day, like I often do, really the 30-minute gap I have, I go and I see what's in the news, you know, or walk outside in the garden, then come back. That is finding the balance, but in the flow. You know, it doesn't mean I'm going to finish my day at 5. That's not the world we're in anymore. But it is about, when did I give myself permission to breathe today so that I don't feel as if, you know, bus really just hit me by the time I go to bed, you know. That's key.
So it's those pockets of, I often refer to them as pockets of wellness that you make for yourself. And it can be the smallest things. You know, I know for me, my cup of tea, I have 2 cups of tea a day because my doctor said I can't have more than that. But I have a cup of tea in the morning. That's my silent time where I sit and I literally sit in the sun and drink tea. And then in the afternoon, I do it again. You know, I call that a pocket of wellness. I call, like, jumping onto TikTok and watching a couple of videos. I mean, yes, it can get out of control sometimes. But, you know, just like that 10 minutes of switching off, you know. And also the things that look after ourselves or that help us look after ourselves internally and externally. A lot of the time when we speak to self-care, we speak about bubble baths and a spa day and things like that. But I also want to emphasize the internal stuff. And I like what you said about your friend group, the CEO squad, I think you said. and how they help you to, or they challenge the way that you think about things. They challenge the way that you, you know, interpret things and process stuff. Mm-hmm. That's all internal, but you know that it's good for you. Mm-hmm. So self-care isn't just the outside stuff. It's also what you're doing for your mind, mm-hmm. And for yourself emotionally, you know. And a lot of the time, our relationships help us with that as mm-hmm. well. You mentioned your partner, your gossip partner, and just to be able to have a safe relationship, mm. a comfortable relationship, a nurturing relationship. How do we use our relationships as well to look after ourselves and ensure that we are creating this buffer? Because as you said, you might have the longest day in the world, but if you incorporate your pockets of wellness, wherever you can, mm. it really makes a difference. Mm. It actually helps you to be able to, as you just said, mm. go to bed and not feel like all you did was give, and now you've got an empty cup. You actually feel a little bit balanced. You may be exhausted, but you probably feel yeah. balanced as well.
Absolutely.
Which I think is great. And I think self-care may look and feel different for different people, but what it is really is about those things in your life that you incorporate just to have
Agreed.
Balance.
Yep.
Just to have a sense of well-being mm. and a sense of I am looking after myself along with doing whatever it is that I need to do in the world, right? Mm. And I mean, I think also when it comes to, you know, the workplace as well, I think it's important for people to look at, because a lot of the time, maybe, people see the workplace as the stressful place. Mm. And all I do when I am there is to give and to, you know, output and all of these things. But I also want to encourage people to look at what is my workplace doing to ensure my wellness mm. as far as they can. But also when I am at work,
yeah.
what am I doing as well? You know, like you said, I like your thing of going for a walk and the fresh air and all of that. What am I doing? How am I creating it for myself, mm. right? And not going in with this, all I have to do is give and I'm not actually getting anything in return. There are things that you can get in return through those relationships that you spoke about and you're encouraging so much through looking after yourself throughout the day. But also as a working professional, there's a reason why you've chosen, you know, the space that you're in. Mm. How do you look at it from an optimistic perspective? You know, when we are burnt out, we do tend to be very pessimistic mm. and, you know, all you see is the bad and all you see is the negative. Mm. It's our responsibility to say, hold on, but, you know, why did I choose to come here? And what is it that was good about my day? What was a really great conversation that I had with the colleague today? It's our responsibility to be of that mindset mm. and to function within that space as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's there's a Nigerian term called juju. It's like bad vibes, witchcraft. And I always say to anybody who wants to start a conversation with me, don't be that person that brings juju to the office. Mm. So be the energy you want to receive mm-hmm. because it's reciprocal, yeah. right? And yeah, it won't come from anywhere, you know. So, and it's fascinating how when one person starts complaining, absolutely it can spread, you know, so badly. So I think we have that responsibility to bring in the good energy. And if you're really not in a good space, to proactively seek help or have your ears and mind open. If somebody says, you seem to be a bit negative, you know, this week, what's happening? So that you can hear, you know, if you're not showing up the right way. The challenge, of course, when somebody, you know, is really considered burnt out is the cynicism is so deep.
It is.
You know, it's very hard for them to see anything good or to be positive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the moments of high stress, etc., I do think we are responsible for the energy we bring. Mm. And the environment we create, you know, it's a sum of all the energies that we're bringing. And just having that peer accountability and the ability to just, you know, hold somebody in check if they're not, you know, behaving in a manner that is required or accepted in the company, mm-hmm. that's key. We can't always look up or sideways for somebody else yeah. to do it.
Yeah.
We have to do it. And that's yeah. the personal responsibility, you know, we all have to take. And maybe, you know, referring somebody for help if you see that mm-hmm. they're struggling, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend relationships between people and their leaders are perfect. Absolutely not. But as a colleague, I also have that responsibility to say, I think this person is struggling. How do I help them go see somebody in HR or wherever, you know? So that's a big part of being in that work community that we all have to, the responsibilities we have to fulfill that we have.
Thank you so much for that, Balesa. And I think that is the perfect note to end on. I'd like to thank you so much for joining us in conversation today. I feel like this is a topic that we could probably discuss for the whole for days. But I'd really like to thank you for sharing your insights. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us in this conversation with The Space Between Us. Let's keep the conversation going. Connect with us on social media or find us on thespacebetweenus.africa. This is where you'll find mental health resources with an African perspective, including psychologist-led articles, workshops, and masterclasses for young professionals. We look forward to connecting with you. Until next time, do take care.